Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All of it, and you know, to Tim, you know, that's a good thing he came on. He explained a lot of the questions that people had, you know, how people took it. Obviously everybody has their own opinions. I did take a couple of notes in regards to some things that he mentioned. You know, in terms of the express shipping, I mean, personally, I placed a few orders with ComC in late December and early January express, and I was able to get both of them relatively in time. I mean, it was about maybe 3 weeks tops for both orders. So I guess the whole backlog started sometime in January moving forward. Yeah. You know, that being said, there's always things that you can do to kind of, you could turn the express shipping off temporarily, not charge people for it, give them a notice on the site. This is the situation, so-and-so. We'd had to disable it for the time being just to catch up. But, you know, all in all, it sounds like he's got a rough year ahead of him, man. And I know he said that this is the, you know, probably the most financially successful year he's had. And I'm sure he'll be fine in the long run in the site and the business. I just hope it doesn't end up looking like the Jordan Fleer PSA 10 graph from the last few sales.
Yeah. And I mean, it might be the best year they ever have. Who knows? But time will tell, you know, I mean, anyway, let's welcome everybody to After Hours Sports Cards Live After Hours. Happy to have you all with us. This is Milan Obradovic, also known as Kobe East Coast on Instagram. One of my favorite accounts to follow. A great dude. We hung out the other night. Give him a follow on Instagram. His handle is on the ticker right now. And listen, yeah, as some people have said, you know, that was a pretty heavy episode. I was, you know, leading all day. It was on my mind all day long, and reading all the comments on the various social media platforms. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people that, you know, just have issues, and a lot of people just aren't willing to listen. You know, a lot of people just don't. They're not willing to be understanding. They're very set in their ways, and that's something that they'll just, you know, that's just the way some people are. It's just reality, and it's fine. All right. I mean, so hopefully some people were a little bit sympathetic. And I mean, it's not like, you know, we're not asking to, oh, poor him or anything like that. The guy put himself in the situation he's in. He built the business, and now he's got to stick handle his way through it. Right. So these challenges,
You know, as they say, hindsight is 20/20. Obviously, you know, he wasn't prepared for the onslaught that was going to come. Could that have been, you know, automated a little bit in the past to kind of move things along? I'm sure. But, you know, us in the hobby, this community, we're very tolerant of things. A lot of things, you know, we kind of take it and shut up and move on and continue collecting, continue looking for the next card. And, you know, that's kind of the way it is. And we forget about a lot of things that happened in the past. So I'm sure ComC is going to have a successful year, and I'm sure they're going to keep building and growing. And, you know, I hope nothing but the best for Tim. I've used them. I know you said you sell on there. I'm sure you bought cards on there. So
buy all the time.
It's an asset for the community for sure.
All right. Yeah, good stuff. All right. Well, I do like to have a little bit of continuity between the Sports Cards Live episode and the After Hours episode, just for myself even to debrief a little bit. So I'm glad that you were able to watch it and talk it out with me. Let's go to the comments. We've got a few. Nice viewership so far. Welcome back, everybody. So we got Chris Carter. He says, I'm sure I'm not the only one who bought cards during that ComC interview, even though I'm super pissed at them. I still bought 8 cards. I mean, business isn't their issue right now. It's the customer experience. And, you know, I spent, as we all just spent 2 solid hours with Tim, I spent about 70 minutes with him a couple nights ago as well. And I mean, I know he cares. When he says that he wants to provide a good experience, he's not just blowing smoke up our behinds. He's actually, he's a sincere guy. And sometimes, you know, might not seem that way from some of the actions they've taken. And, but I trust that that is what they're trying to do and they'll do the best they can. Hopefully they get there. But like he said, he told us, hold me to it. He'll come back and we'll talk about it more, but you don't have to wait till he comes back here. We'll see how the year unfolds. Dr. Full says, yeah, now that I see the CEO is a genuine guy, it bumped my confidence. I bought about a dozen or so in the last hour. Dennis Lescombe says, hello, Jay Lee and everybody. Hopefully this is a little more lighthearted. Time to relax and enjoy some car talk. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hockey guy says, people in that chat were so incredulous. Yeah, I'm just glad I did not watch the chat for the first time ever, and I'm glad I didn't. I also go to Ontas. Ever thought about having some mods, Jeremy? I've thought about it. I've thought about it, Chris. I have. 23 Aranis, they were incredible. I think that's a compliment, so I'll take it as one and say thank you, 23 Aranis. Our guy Jordan Hagedorn in the house. What's up, Milan? Great stuff as always. Great to see you, Jordan. Thanks for tuning in, buddy. Appreciate it, my man. Peter Chow says there's a lot of passion about ComC because they really want it to work. That's a fair comment. Chris says people act like there's some magic wand that ComC can wave to solve all the problems. Fair comment. Peeps likes the display behind you. And I got to say, when Milan and I hung out last night, I was like, I love your background, man. I love that it goes back on the angle. They kind of, you know, get narrower as they go back. Really cool display. Let's run through the comments, and then it's all going to be about you, my man. All going to be about you. Dr. Full says, I can't even get cards in person at the store, so I can't blame ComC right now. Chris Carter, for 4 years, I did staffing operations, consulting, and solutions. I could literally add 500 people on his team in 3 months. There's no excuse why he cannot do that. I could add staff, space, and training A to Z. Chris Carter, no, you can't. No, you can't. Not in this environment, my man. Not in this environment. You cannot. But thanks for flexing your muscles, buddy. ComC Barry says, thank you, Jeremy, for the tribute. You're welcome, ComC Barry. It was my honor and privilege to be able to tribute the show to your mother. We're sorry for her loss, Barry. And on that note, we're going to take a minute once again for the night. And we're going to do one more tribute to Barry's mother because Barry is a personal friend of mine. He's been on the show before as a guest. And I want to do this one more time for Barry, for Barry's family. So we're going to bring up Miwoon Ma one more time. And just here we go. There she is. There's your mother, Barry. Sorry for your loss. Sorry to your family for your loss, Barry. And remember the good times, my man. Remember, she had a nice full life. Remember the good times. Okay. Hockey guy says, we're not going to get into back and forth right now, but thank you, Chris. Rage says, I'm back at it like a crack addict. And first off, let me say RIP to DMX. Damn shame. Fair, fair, fair. Joe Perot wants to talk a little. Kobe. Darren's back in the house. He says, bought one, offered on two more during that. Sanderson DeOr, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Jeff Roth says, it was the same 4-5s repeating their crap. Thank you, Jeff Roth. Dunkachino, UCLA took a better L than Topps Project 2020. We got Daniel in the house. Good evening, Daniel. Chris says, not if done right. Chris, I don't know. Chris, I think I'm just going to shut you up for the night. And there we go. Not going to hear from you anymore. Jeremy Pringle staying up late. Welcome, Jeremy. Fans, facts, okay. Yeah, I'm just going to do what I want to do and do a bit of that. All right. And Roddy Booth wants to send his condolences one more time to you. Barry Peep sends his love. Todd McDonald, thank you very much. Okay, Milan.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about your journey, man. You're a collector. I'm a collector. We both are collectors. This show is about learning about other people and how they collect. So give us your story, man. Like, start at the beginning. What drives you? What do you collect? What are your earliest memories? All these things.
All right. So obviously, having the tag when I created the Instagram page about 3 years ago, Kobe East Coast, Kobe was the only player that I ever collected, that I built my PC around, and his cards were the only ones that I had, you know, front and center, throughout throughout my years of collecting him. That being said, going back earlier, like, you know, majority of us, we started in the early 90s that are our age. It started in, you know, 93 when I moved here. I moved to New York in 92 from Europe. And at that time, Shaq was huge. I remember the Reeboks, the Zebras. Like, I got those as a kid. And I was in love with Shaq, the Magic. That was my guy. So when I was, you know, a teenager, young, you know, my young teens, I collected his cards. And I had about 50 or 60 of, you know, Shaquille O'Neal cards from Flair, from the Upper Decks and everything. And then I really stopped in 96, like a lot of people did. Because, you know, I was, it was high school, so on and so forth. Life happens. And I took a break for about a good 11 years. And in 2007, I moved out of my house. And, you know, when you move, my mother sent me a box of stuff that I left behind. And I found my, I found some cards. And there was a Charles Barkley Flair, I want to say Hot Numbers, from 95 or 94. And I put it up on eBay. I signed up on eBay in 2007. And I put it up on eBay, and that card sold for $60. And that blew my mind. I was like, there's actually some value in terms of what these cards are worth over time. So being on eBay, you know, I started getting into random things here and there. I started buying boxes. And back then, boxes were pretty affordable. You know, a couple hundred dollars here, $50 there. So what actually got me into Kobe, the linchpin of it, was in about 2009, my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, she, for my birthday, bought me a box of 96-97 Skybox Premium from Dave and Adams. And I got that box. We opened it up for my birthday. And lo and behold, the single loose card on top of that box was the Kobe Rookie Skybox Premium, the Ruby. And at that time, that, you know, that blew my mind. And that was the most expensive card in my collection, monetarily speaking, at that time. And this was about the time when I got into grading as well. Growing up with Beckett magazine, I always associated Beckett with basketball, and PSA for me was vintage and baseball. So I sent an order to Beckett. It was that Kobe. It was a bunch of other random cards. And that card came back to 9.5. Once that happened, my whole OCD started kicking in when I saw the gold label, when I saw it slabbed, it was protected. I went on a quest to try to pick up as many gem mint Kobes as I could. Like, for me, it was 9.5s all day long, the gold label. I'll be honest with you. I did not really understand or appreciate the rarity of some of the cards. Luckily, through my binge collecting of about 4 years, 5 years, I was able to pick up some of the rare cards. But I was more focused on what they look like. If they're rookies, that's fine. But I was more focused on building a nice display of BGS 9.5 Kobe Bryant so that I could enjoy it. I didn't hang out with people that collected basketball. I didn't, you know, I had no friends. There was no local LCS. That all closed down. So it was kind of just me on eBay shopping, so on and so forth. And then I went on the Beckett registry in the early stages. And I found out that there was people that actually registered the 9.5s, and there was a grading scale. And at one point down the line, a few years down the line, I ended up getting to number 3 or number 4. I was somewhere in the top 5 to 10 from memory of having BGS 9.5 Kobe's as a registry. One person, and this is how crazy, which we'll move forward to later, the Instagram, social media, and everything else, how crazy everything comes back around. I bought a handful of Kobe Bryant 9.5s from, I believe it was the number 2 registry at that time. It was Dominate was the name. I remember it. And I used to just buy Kobe's off him literally like once a week, twice a week. We start messaging him. And then lo and behold, when I got on Instagram, he had the same Instagram tag. And we connected on Instagram. And he was like, I was like, dude, I remember you. I got all these cards from you. I still have them. It was a crazy, like, you know, it was fun. And yeah, that's what kind of, That's where we are now with the social media, is, you know, with the whole amount of people that are in it, different types of people, and it just all brings us together. So the collection continued. You know, I at that point I built up a good sized collection that I had displayed in my house. Like I do this, like I have it now. It's always been displayed on my wall. But I really, about 2013 when I stopped, and I stopped because at that time, like, you know, I kind of spent the most money on a card I ever did. And ended up, it was the Jambalaya. It was a 9.5 Jambalaya. And that kind of scared me. Because at that point I was like, this is crazy to be spending this much money on a card. So I took a little break. I didn't want to go crazy about it, but I had enough cards. And after that, I kind of disappeared. Like I didn't follow, I was on Blowout. That's pretty much all I knew was Blowout and Hobby Kings. And I stopped going on there. I stopped, I took a break from the hobby. And then in 2018, I know your buddy, you said, Jake, 90s B-ball cards. I was laying in bed watching YouTube, and the recommended video comes on, and it's him breaking a box of basketball cards. I put it on, watched like 3-4 of his videos, and then Josh got recommended, so I watched Cardboard Chronicles, and that brought me back into it. Then I discovered Instagram, and long story short, I'll get to the end, but that's pretty much how, you know, the whole page started, meeting people and getting back into this hobby for the good last 3 years.
All right. So, okay. And I know there's a lot more to your story. There's some big events. There's some big turning points in your collecting. Before we get, and we're gonna get to that in a minute, but we do have some more comments. So let's just see what we got coming through here. Fresh Bread says, wish it was possible to go back in time and buy at pre-COVID prices. Everybody wishes that right now. 100%. I love it. Courtside Collectibles says, haha, Kobe's ghost chasing same card as me. Still love the BGS gold label. Darren says, I just need the flux capacitor and some plutonium to go back in time for sure. Birds on the Bat enjoying the story. Thank you, Birds on the Bat. Basketball card collector 93 Matt G says, that's how I met you, Milan.
Hey, Matt.
Good times, my friend. Good old IG. Jordan Riker says, my blood pressure is significantly lower in this live stream than the first one tonight. Am I alone? You are not alone, Jordan. Me too. Although not addressing the comments, ignoring them was a great strategy for me in that first episode. So, okay, Milan. So there's a lot more to what you said, but before you go to it, I want to touch on the fact that you were all about the BGS 9.5 gem mints with those nice gold labels in the holders, the flips. Are you OCD? Do you consider yourself to be OCD I'll put it in air quotes, OCD when it comes to the hobby? I know most of us are, but what do you say to that?
I am, in the sense that when it comes to the display of cards, for me personally, I've noticed that I like uniformity. I'm sure a lot of people do too. And the other thing is, it's very hard to be uniform nowadays. But I've kind of come up with a solution for myself as well. But I like uniformity. I've also noticed, since I have them displayed and I keep them displayed, I like vertical cards. I don't really mess with horizontal cards anymore. It doesn't matter which one it is. I will not pursue a horizontal card because I don't like the way it looks displayed. But yes, it was that. And then it was also the point at that time that a 9.5 was a 9.5. You knew why it was a 9.5. You had the subgrade. I never paid attention. I wasn't one of those people like, oh, it's a true gem mint, it's not a gem mint, it's a gem mint plus. That didn't really matter to me. As long as it was slab, a 9.5. And I knew why it was a 9.5. And to that point, I'll give you a little funny story now. I purchased a raw Slam Bams Kobe. I want to say 2012. I think I bought it for like $330. It was to 250, and I sent it to get graded, and it came back in 8.5. And when it came back in 8.5, I was like, I don't want to keep it because there's that silver label, and it's messing with the. So I ended up selling it, and it actually, I lost money on it because an 8.5 sold for less than a raw back then. I didn't know that you're supposed to crack it out, and then that's all things you learn down the line, like when you start focusing on grading. So in my mind, I was like, this didn't get a 9.5. I'll just wait till one when a 9.5 comes up. I don't even know if there still is a 9.5. There might be like a pop one. So that card was never coming back. And if I knew the way things were going to go, like, you know, all of us had that story. The 8.5 is like $17,000-$18,000 now, probably, to 250. So that's kind of my whole train of thought back then was before, you know, following these prices, knowing everything. So yes, 9.5s, uniformly gold label, it pops. Across the room, you see the gold label, you know what it is. That was all me. Like that, you go to a show, you know what's a gem mint, you know what's a mint. You know, PSA kind of changed that around nowadays. It doesn't really matter like that, but that's my that was my whole point in the building of the collection.
I hear you, man. I mean, and I'm with you too. I like uniformity as well in my collection, but like you said, it's harder and harder to do. Some cards are so rare that if they come up in a Beckett, if you're a PSA guy and a card comes up in a BGS holder, you know, and you buy it, you maybe just don't try and cross it over or break. It's like, you know what? I'm happy with that card in a BGS 9. I don't want to risk taking it out, risk getting it downgraded. You know, you just never know. So I'm with you. But I've also loosened up on my personal requirement to be uniform. I've now got slabs, PSA, BGS, and SGC. And I have two KSA cards, which is a Canadian grading company, because they're PMG, they're hockey PMGs that are rare. It's like, I just want the card. I don't care. Send it to me in a top loader or a KSA case. Doesn't matter to me.
Exactly. Right.
Okay. I want you to get ready to tell the story because there's a question that came in here from Sanderson to Ori. He says, do you find it easier or harder to find Kobe cards now since his passing? Well, I know from our discussions that the answer to this isn't what people expect unless they know you. So we're gonna get to that in a second. Get your story straight in your head, Milan. And I'm just going to go through the comments that have come in. Currency Project, good evening, says, great story, Milan. Take notes, guys. If your girlfriend buys you a box for your birthday, make her your wife. That's great advice. Hockey Guy says, pretty cool. He collected based on appearance, regardless of the value and rareness, right? That's a collector right there, and I know Milan's a collector. Darren's going to check bid status. That could be on the golden auctions, which are ending tonight, which I'm not watching, but I'm hoping a lot of people are buying some good cards tonight. Peter says that back in the day, a BGS 9.5 outsold PSA 10s as well, at least on modern issues. I don't remember it that way, but some people do. So maybe we're looking at different cards. Jump in.
They were close. They were very close. If not, a little higher, a little lower, but they were literally like this.
Awesome. Dennis says, I just started up my Instagram because of this show and the hobby to make it more fun. Just followed Kobe East Coast. Great stuff. Yeah, Dennis, I mean, Instagram has made the hobby more fun and the relationships. I mean, and I wanted to touch on that with you as well, Milan, because you mentioned that, you know, all you knew before was, I think you said Hobby Kings and Blowout, and then you found Instagram. Let's segue there, actually. How did Instagram change your hobby experience, for better, for worse? Like, what was it like for you?
I'll be honest with you. Without Instagram, I would not have been able to do what I ended up doing. So 100%, it changed my life, my collecting, my knowledge. But at the same time, you have to be very careful with the influences of Instagram as well. I like to say, I admire other people's collections, but I don't tend to try to follow other people's collections. I try to, you know, I'm more of an admirer and a connoisseur than trying to do what other people say should be done. And I could run case in points over the last 3 years of several cards, which I might later, that I think were just inflated for the sake of inflation by who knows who. But yes, Instagram 100% changed my collecting, my perspective on cards, and just in general, I think helped this community grow tremendously, along with everything that's happened over the last year. But it was the number one catalyst.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Instagram to me has become a major. For me, it's Instagram, it's YouTube, it's this, Facebook as well. But you know, you use Facebook. I have two Instagram accounts. One's for cards, which is way bigger than my personal account, and one for my kids, really, to show pictures of my kids to my friends and family. Otherwise, it's all about the card account. And now it's Clubhouse. I mean, Clubhouse is becoming like, it's keeping me up late at night. Clubhouse has been a lot of fun. But the good thing about, and I don't know if you're, are you on Clubhouse yet?
I've been on it a few times. I've listened to a few conversations, but I mean, I just, I don't have, I can't get into that too. It's just, if I get any more consumed with this phone, my wife might divorce me.
Well, I know my wife rolls her eyes at me. Actually, she's like, "What time did you come to bed last night?" I'm like, 12:30, you know, on a Thursday night when I got work the next day. I'm like, I was planning to come up early, but then this guy came on or that guy came on to the conference. I'm really enjoying the platform. I hope it continues and doesn't get old too quick for me, but I'm enjoying that. So, okay. A few more comments. Then we're going to hear about the Kobe stuff. Okay. Dennis enjoys it. Basketball. Matt says BGS equals true collector status. Paul says, LOL, Dennis. Jeremy has a lot to answer for. He got me on Instagram chasing cards I'd never known about. That's hilarious, Paul. Yeah, man. But I mean, I'm finding cards on Instagram all the time that I didn't know about as well. That I, you know, you see a card, you go to eBay to find, right? That's what you do. That's
exactly.
What you do.
Exactly.
Darren says, how many YouTubers do you think have been born out of this card boom? Guilty as charged. My wife loves it in quotes for sure. Sanderson to Orr says that Paul Ditto, I'm chasing Dutch gum cards. I didn't even know existed because of him. Sorry, guys, but they're cool cards, right? As you know. Matt has two accounts too. I talk to my hobby friends more than my real friends. Same here, but my hobby friends are my real friends. Like, case in point, my man Joe Perot here, he's like become one of my best buddies. He says, can Milan comment on Kobe's autos in general and perhaps which Kobe autos he has in his collection? We're going to table that question for a minute because you're going to address your Kobe collection.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to get to that. Trust us, Joe. Fresh Bread says IG and Facebook Marketplace are the future of selling. So long, eBay. Fair comment. Chris says Jeremy's Instagram is dangerous. Makes me want cards I've never seen before. And Jordan Riker says, Milan, will we get to see some of your favorite cards? Yes, we will, Jordan. Okay. Tell us about your Kobe collection. But I want you to start with why were you collecting Kobe in the first place? I don't think you addressed. Did you already address that? Why Kobe?
Well, maybe not. But so I followed Shaq. I loved Shaq when I was a kid. He moved to the Lakers, and then Kobe came as a young up-and-coming guy. I watched the tail end of Jordan's career, but when it came to card collecting, Jordan's prices were just, even at that time, just more than I wanted to spend or could spend. So I started, I focused on Kobe, but I didn't really start collecting Kobe until I pulled that card. That card was the linchpin of my collection because it's kind of like, you get something so rare at first, you want to build around it. You want that to be your centerpiece. That was my goal. That was my grail. I pulled it myself. And then I just built around it. I built this kind of mosaic of various cards around it that I could enjoy. So my Kobe collecting started later. But to that point, when I did start collecting Kobe, unbeknownst to me, but comparing it to the way people are buying cards today, of young guys, in 2008, he won 5 championships. He was down to the end of his career. You knew he was going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, it was kind of set in stone. He was a generational player. So I try to, you know, tell people now that are coming into it, think about that. If you're thinking about collecting long-term and you're not worried, because everything's about money now. So if you're not worried about losing your money and you want to collect some of these young guys, you know, you got to have a little bit of a to pull those triggers on some of these prices.
Right. Okay. So you collected Kobe. Where are those? I know the answer, but are those Kobe cards behind you?
They're not.
So tell us about your Kobe collection. You built it up. How many cards did you have and where are they now?
Okay. So I had, at the peak, I had a total of 138 BGS 9.5 Kobe cards. When I got back into 2018, I picked up probably between 2018 and 2020, about a good 15 cards, at various price points. One of the last cards that I picked up was one that I was chasing it for a while. I passed up on it a few times. I don't know why. It just wasn't the right opportunity. Was the 96-97 EX base rookie, the green one. I mean, there's thousands of that card, but in all the years that I've ever been submitted, and I've submitted at least 20 plus of those myself over the years, there's only a pop 23 of 9.5. So the odds of me submitting that card again after so many years have passed from it being pulled or so on and so forth and getting a gem mint was almost impossible. So that was one of the last cards that I ended up picking up. That was in March of last year. After that, I did grab a few more cards, but I didn't get them gem mint because I knew they were going to gem mint. I just got them authenticated, but I did get serial short printed cards. And one of the cards that I picked up after that card was the Fleer Classic 61. That card is serial number 61. I actually got that on Facebook Marketplace and I had it authenticated because I knew it wasn't a gem mint, but I wanted to have it protected and slabbed. And then, being shut down, everything going crazy with these prices. Obviously, after he passed away, like I remember it like it was yesterday. I'm a realtor, so I was doing an open house. And when I finished the open house, I looked at my phone. I had like sales because I had raw cards that I sold $5, $15, $20 cards, all gone. And I looked at the news and I literally started crying when I was like, it really bothered me. Like, I'm sure a lot of people were affected by it, like myself. And it kind of felt different afterwards, like to buy, to collect, to look at him. It wasn't the same joy because you knew what happened to that person. But that being said, once this market started going crazy with the prices, I mean, you think about it, trying to get cards that I was missing were five figures and up. Like, I was missing, obviously, the PMGs, the so on and so forth. I had the Atomic Refractor Rookie. I had the Jumble. I had the Noise Boys. I had Intimidation Nation. So picking up some of these cards that I was missing just got to the point where it didn't make sense for me financially. Responsibly.
Yeah. You have a family, and, right?
Yes. I'm married. I got two kids. I got two little kids. I think they're around the same age as your children, 4 and 2.
Yeah.
5 and 2.
Yeah.
So you know how things go. I mean, it's life. And I waited for the summer, but sometime in June, last year, I started thinking about, where is this value going? And it got to the point where my wife and I were looking at moving. I live in Brooklyn, New York. We wanted to get out of here, especially with the whole pandemic and everything that was happening, city being shut down. You're stuck inside with two kids. I wanted a yard. We're planning on buying a house. We weren't far off. But the thought of buying it comfortably appealed to me instead of, getting it and then worrying about this and so forth. I just wanted to be comfortable and enjoy it. So August 24th passed, the 824 day. I knew that day was going to be huge. But I also knew that the 1 year anniversary was going to come up on his passing. And that was going to be another big day. In between that time, in September, on Instagram, so this is 2.5 years of being on Instagram, building up a decent following, communicating with people, building up relationships and showing off and so on and so forth. I put my whole collection up for sale as a lot. I put up 138 BGS Gem Mint Kobe Bryants as a lot. I did not want to piece them out. I did not want to sell them one by one. I just wanted to do it that way. And I used to joke around with my friend on Instagram, Shay. He used to tell me, like, this is a bubble. This is imaginary. This is this. This is that. About the prices, the way things were skyrocketing. So I put it up and I sent it to a couple of people that I knew were Kobe collectors that obviously seemed like they were wealthy. They might be interested. I actually did get an offer from somebody in California that I was going to actually fly them out myself. But we were just this much apart, a little bit. So that didn't work out. But luckily, somebody else anonymously contacted me and they were local. And I ended up doing the transaction sometime in October for all the cards. And once that happened, it was a relief in the sense that it was for my family. That's the only reason why I did it. My wife was against it at first. That's how you know it's love.
Yeah, totally. She knew you.
Right. But yeah. I told her, I was like, listen, I'm ready. I've had this. I can't buy any more cards. That's the problem. Like, I can't buy the cards that I want to continue building this PC, and I'm just not going to settle for anything just to say I'll settle for it. So, sold the collection, and literally, anybody that's from the Northeast right now, and you know, from California to Arizona, from New York to New Jersey, the outer state and the suburbs were exploding in terms of real estate over the past year because of everything that's happening. So I sold the collection in October. Beginning of December, I was in contract on a house. So like this. And it couldn't have happened in a smoother, better way. I mean, it was just kind of, it was meant to be, Jeremy. So that being said, that's kind of where, you know, okay, where we're at.
So you sold off the Kobe collection and you put that money directly into a house for your family, which is not where you are right now. I know that because we chatted. Your house is being, the renovations are being done. You're going to move in the near future. You got yourself a yard for the kids. You're a house versus an apartment or a condo sort of thing. So, hey man, I mean, congratulations. It's not easy to do, but you did it. I love that your wife was against it at first, but hopefully she loves the house. You guys are happy in there, and you raise your family in the new house. That's great. But obviously you're back in the hobby. You've got cards. We can see them with our own two eyes. You're back in the hobby. So why don't you now tell us about how you got started again, and what is the subject matter of those cards behind you now?
All right. So once I moved the collection, I'm from New York, so I'm a huge Knicks fan growing up. They're my team. I started looking at RJ Barrett. And, obviously Zion is astronomical, Trae Young, Luka. RJ Barrett was still doable, in my opinion, in terms of the prices. So I picked up, maybe 15, 20 of his cards, but I tried to pick up the rarer ones just kind of as, down the line. My thought was they were going to go up in value, but after reinvesting some of the money, because I reinvested some of the money back into the hobby just because I that's what I like keep doing.
You can't take the collector can't take the collector out of the hobby, I guess.
Once I got to the point where I was several thousand dollars into RJ Barrett, I started assessing the risk in it, and it went back to like, what has he done that that I'm supposed to be spending this much money on him. And then in end of November, before December, November, right around before Christmas, so middle of December, I had a live on my page with another friend of mine who I met through the hobby, basketball card guy John. He's local around here too, and we were talking about stories about where we were growing up and so on and so forth. And I told him a story when in 1996, when we came here, I didn't know about baseball. Baseball isn't played in Europe where I came from. So I had no idea about baseball, the rules or anything. My father ended up getting tickets as a gift to a Yankee game in 1996. And we went, and it was the Yankees versus the Mariners. And the tickets that we got were behind the Mariners dugout. And we're sitting there throughout the game, and it's boring. And I'm just sitting, and nothing's happening. And, I'm like, my father's, I'm trying to explain to him something that I know about the game. But it literally, time stood still. This is what I remember. I go back home, and my uncle, who's American, the next day, he's like, where you were at? And I was like, the Yankee game. He's like, yeah, but you went to the Dwight Gooden no-hitter. I was like, what does that mean? He's like, and he explained to me what a no-hitter is. And so I was like, it was crazy. It was fun. But that being said, the RJ Barrett thing was a little too high risk for me. So I went back and I tried to analyze at what price points can I start picking up somebody that I could compare to Kobe Bryant in a number of ways. And, to make a little story short, it's Derek Jeter. And here's my thought process why I started collecting Derek Jeter. Number one, there were rookies in the same year. Jeter won our Rookie of the Year in 1986. And I've been doing this research, and I don't know baseball that well, but I know, I learned a few things. The cards that they have, and this is the biggest thing, the cards that they have that appeal to me they have so many similar insert sets designs from the late 90s. I mean, it's insane. On top of that, there's a statistic of similarities between the two. They both played for the same team for 20 years. They both won 5 championships. Their career earnings are identical, literally identical, the way they go up. And I mean, being in New York, I was a Yankee fan in the late 90s. Like, you know, I remember the championships once I learned baseball and I started following it. So it was just a logical thing to me. And on top of that, the price points for Jeter compared to where Kobe is are something that I could absorb and I could, you know, enjoy. Plus, he's not going anywhere. In my opinion, he's the captain.
No, there's no risk. There's no risk like there is with R.J. Barrett.
Right, right. I mean, that's that R.J. Barrett, and that's with anybody that's playing nowadays. So it's one of those things that I moved the whole collection. So this whole wall now is all Jeters, and then I pulled out some cards over here that I'll show whenever you like, and kind of compare them a little bit to some Kobe's.
Sure. Yeah, we'll get to that shortly. I want you to just speak about, because when we talked the other night, you kind of provided a perspective that I think is important that people hear. There's always something you can move on to. Can you just speak to that? I think people should hear it. I thought it was really interesting.
Yes. So when you collect, I typically relate to people that collect like a player PC or have a purpose to their collection in the sense that, you know, whatever it is, but there's a purpose to it. It's not to buy to sell tomorrow. It's to buy and to collect and to hold on to and to appreciate and to look at and to enjoy. So, you know, going from Kobe and being at that point where you couldn't afford any more of the cards that you wanted to get from him, I thought it would be tough to move on. Like, you know, what do you do afterwards? Kind of like you hit a roadblock. And I wasn't going to sell the collection to buy a card, you know, like I wasn't going to reinvest the whole collection into one card. Yeah. I like variety. I like
that would have been the ultimate consolidation.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that wasn't me. That wasn't my goal. So you find something and anybody that collects cards will find something or some player that has some type of meaning or connection to. And you could enjoy it. And then if you like an era, like we were discussing the late 90s, prime example of you know, one of the most distinguishable eras in card, you know, history, it was like the perfect storm that came next. And I'm grateful that I was able to jump on it when I did. I'm grateful that, you know, I was able to get some of the cards in such a short period of time, because I'll be honest with you, before December, I had 0 Jeters. And, you know, I did go a little nuts. But
I love your wall, though, bro. I mean, what a great wall. It's amazing, guys. If you didn't hear that clearly, everything behind him has been acquired since December. I just want to make sure people caught that. Please continue.
So, yeah, that was the perfect storm. And like, you know, the designs is what I'm attracted to, the history behind it. And it's just, I love looking at them. Like I enjoy getting up, walking, you know, walking around, being able to look at them. And there's that connection to it that brings me back to the Kobe's, but also allows me to move forward and kind of expand and learn. And I'll be honest with you, I learned about a lot of his cards while I was trying to pick them up. I probably even overpaid for some of them. It's fine. I mean, they're gonna be here. It's not like, you know, so there's, I remember you talking about the Jordans with Rodman 2 weeks ago, how you set the market on some things. Listen, if you want it, if you like, you know, it doesn't matter. Like if you can get it, you get it. So that's kind of where I'm at now with the new collection and new endeavors and moving forward.
So let me ask you this. I mean, and I got to think some people are wondering, do you miss the Kobe's?
No. Because, I mean, when it got to the point, I had them there. There was no value, monetarily speaking, that was like life-altering while they were there. And it's another thing, once you actually have the card and you enjoy it, like I enjoy them for years and years. And they grew on me and I grew out of them, you know. once you move on from them, but you use the, you use what they, like what they did for me will never be replaced. Like to me personally, like that's never going to change. So I don't miss them because they helped me. He helped me, obviously not knowing, but his life changed my life. It's one of those 6 degrees of separation kind of thing that people always talk about, but I am a living witness to having that change my life. And you know, I'll show you this. I made a little board that's going to go up in the new house once I'm done in my man cave, kind of to commemorate everything that I picked up. And so these are some of the cards that I had, and you can see, you know, what some of them were. And then House of Cards, I did a little signature of him and the logo. And this is going to go up on the wall in the man cave to kind of always remember where it came from, you know?
That is like one of the coolest hobby stories, artifacts. Like, I'm going to do a quick recap, okay? Kid comes over from Europe to New York, goes to a baseball game, follows Shaquille O'Neal, collects Kobe Bryant. I mean, it's kind of the order, even though it doesn't really piece together.
Right.
Collects Kobe Bryant cards, decides to sell the collection, buys a house with the proceeds, gets back into Derek Jeter, which ties into being at that baseball game originally, lives in New York, Yankees fan, starts collecting Derek Jeter. But now you've made this plaque that you're going to hang up in the house. It says right. House of Cards, because the cards bought the house.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially that's a legend. This is, I think it's like a legendary story, Milan. I really do.
I'm not sure if I'm the first, I'm definitely not the last person that did this. I don't think I'm the first person that did it, but it just so happened that it coincided with Instagram and that, you know, I was able to kind of share it with some people that I know. And also, who knew all this was going to happen? I mean, it was a perfect storm per se. And I'm just happy that I was able to be at the right place at the right time and make life better for my kids down the line. I mean, no one can
fault you for that, man. I mean, no one. And the fact that you're still in the hobby and you're cool with it and you went from collecting Kobe to Jeter. I mean, you can't go wrong either way. You still get some of these awesome 90s cards, which we talked about. Yep. We both love, you know. Yep. Matt makes a comment. He goes, yes, the best man cave item. I mean, that's that you built a plaque to commemorate the journey you took and the transaction that led to the house. I mean, I agree with Matt. That is the best man cave item. Like that item, anyone comes into your house, that item is going to tell the story. You know,
it's a talking piece. Totally. And for my kids down the line too, you know, when my son gets older and I can, you know, explain to him how everything happened. So
totally,
it's one of those things that, it's the way it is.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. We're going to read out some comments. We'll discuss a few of them. And, okay. So let's just get started with that. Darren says, would love to get a flyby of Milan's wall. So I don't know if you're on a phone or a computer, if we can get a, can we get a flyby of the wall? Or is that
I'm on my computer. I can't, but I pulled out some of the better cards over here. So I'll flash them.
We'll take a look at them. Sanderson to Orr says, I'm starting I blame Jeremy for my card addiction support group. Who's in? That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Matt says, okay, so this is going back already about 20 minutes, but he says Kobe prices were so low relative to MJ and LeBron. Kobe was such a great way to go when collecting a great player. Yeah, I mean, probably the best bang for your buck. And if you loved and respected him, I mean, how can you go wrong? Tree City Gaming, welcome to the show, says I have 26K raw assets that would grade no lower than PSA 9, most 10s, just sitting until July. Sounds like a nice little gold mine you're sitting on. Henry says, Jordan and Kobe are pretty much the same to me. The fadeaway is unstoppable. Tree City says, 80 cases of soccer wax sitting in storage. Hey, nice. Very nice. Congratulations to you, Tree City Gaming.
There you go.
Henry says, 90s high-end insert of Jordan and Kobe are the best. Can't disagree with that at all. Darren says, why do some people opt for an auto to be certified only in the slab and not also graded as well? I think some people just want the card slabbed, the auto certified, and maybe they don't feel that the card would grade high enough, so they just go that way. Do you have any insight into that, Milan?
I would think that would be the case most of the time. If there's some issue with the card, they just want the autograph to be certified and, you know, graded the auto if it's clean. I mean, it still adds value to the card because they put the, you know, the 10 there.
Agreed. Matt says that's an incredible moment though, brother. Life-changing, much respect. Sanderson likes the story. So this is before we announced it was Jeter. Matt knew it was coming. Jeter incoming. Basketball card therapy. So I don't know if these guys know you or they recognize the cards in the background. Do you?
I follow a bunch of these guys.
They know you. They know you for sure. Darren likes the story. Corey Carr says, how can you argue trading cards for a house? Great story. This is cool. Dr. Full was at the Doc no-hitter game also.
There you go. Look at that.
That's pretty world. Cool. That's really cool. Jordan Riker brings up the April Fool's joke from a couple days ago. Did you both see the grading company April Fool's joke? Thoughts? I mean, I'll be honest. I saw it. I went to the website. Someone sent me an email and said, is this a joke? And I went to it. I'm like, it's a joke for sure, you know, but they went to elaborate lengths on that joke. Like, and for that, kudos to them. Like that was an awesome, awesome joke.
I guarantee you people signed up on the waiting list. I'm not going to lie to you. But when I saw the, I looked at it, but when I saw the do not grade part on the website, I was like, this is some of the funniest thing I've seen in a while.
And the fact that they send you the grading slab and you put your card in there, it's like, okay, that's when I was like, definitely that doesn't make sense, right? That's
pretty good. Myself an 11.
Yeah, Matt says, and it's fun and something you can enjoy for the time to come, connected to a great childhood memory, which I think is because you're connected to Dwight Gooden, makes good sense to me. Lucky says, was the sale price of the Kobe collection disclosed? I'll let you answer that one.
No,
it wasn't and not going to be. Daniel says, so smart jumping on Jeter cards, Milan. I had to have a PSA 9 SP rookie, and I finally got one in July 2020.
Nice.
Very awesome. Very nice. Sanderson Tora, I'm in Boston, and this Lakers-Yankee stuff is killing me. but you can always appreciate the passionate collector, right, Sanderson Tora? That's what I got to say about it. 23 Aaron says, Milan, is collecting an athlete who is no longer alive different than someone with us? Like, what about people who collect Babe Ruth? No one alive has met him, but yet they collect the Bambino. So what can you say to that, to 23 Aaron? Is it different collecting someone who's alive versus someone who passed away? But I mean, you collected Kobe and then he passed away, and then 2020 happened. So
it wasn't so much that he wasn't alive anymore. I mean, it was weird. I couldn't literally look at the cards for some time because it just, but it was more so the price of where everything was going. Like, it got to the point where it was uncomfortable. Like, why, you know, I wasn't the type of person that was going to spend five figures on a card. Like, that's just not me.
Yeah.
So it was more the price than anything else. It was, you know.
There's a funny comment coming here. And I just realized, Milan, that usually I have it set so you can see the comments, but I didn't change it after the last episode. Tim could not see the comments during the last show. I'll fix that for you after I show the comment that's coming up.
I hope mines aren't as bad as his were.
no, not even close, I'm sure. Henry says, I will sell some of my high-end Kobe to get married this year. I mean, no one's going to argue with that. But then your buddy Shay. We got Shay Vlogs in the house. Good evening, Shay says, Milan is looking very sexy tonight.
That's my buddy. You don't believe the prices.
I know. Here, I'm going to change it so you can see the comments now. They should show up for you now, Milan. Corey Carr, simmer down, Shay. The Timster, congratulations again for the great show. First time for me to catch it live. Love the content, Jeremy, and congratulations on the great hobby story, Milan.
Thank you,
the Timster. Really appreciate that on both of our accounts. Thank you so much. DJQ says, coming over from Europe, I assume you are a soccer fan, Milan. Any interest in PCing any footy?
No, I don't. That's completely new to me, soccer cards. I know the Panini has the stickers in the early 90s and like the late 80s of the soccer stars. If there's one player that I would collect just from personal preference that I like, is Ruud Gullit.
Who?
That's it. Ruud Gullit.
Okay.
I played FIFA. He's the best midfielder in FIFA. He's a legend.
He's a video game legend. All right. Waxel says the basketball card guy has a sick infatuation with April Fool's Day, and he definitely got me. Yeah, that was, I mean, they did a website. Like, that was, was full out.
They did an interview with Darren Revelle. Like, what do you,
full out. And Sports Card Review says my dad is alive and he met the Babe and Lou Gehrig. Okay. So let's see some cards, man. People want to see cards. Let's see some cards. What are we waiting for?
All right. So, I mean, listen, I'll start with some stuff. Like, a lot of the stuff that I'm getting is stuff that Kobe had, like the card they had. So I'll start off with a little Planet Metal. Oh,
I love Planet Metal, man. I love Planet Metal.
And, you know, obviously these are condition sensitive, and I'll get into the point why they are raw. But I will eventually send all these to PSA. I'm just not going to pay for uncertain turnaround times. I'll wait for them to get their stuff in order. So when I pay for something, that it's going to get to me when it's supposed to. Another classic 90s card that Kobe was in, Soul of the Game. There's like three different versions of this card. Some have the red on top with the blue and the green. I mean, just classic 90s stuff.
Yep. Definitely.
Here's I know you have the Griffey in this one, but this is the 97 Flair Showcase Hot Gloves. Derek Jeter, you have the 90. You have the Griffey, no?
No, I have the year before. I have. I'm just actually pulled up my grade of baseball just so I could see it. I've got the 94 Hot Gloves Griffey. Yeah.
So you had the Griffey 94. My years.
I had my eye on the Griffey from that year just the other day, and I didn't place a bid, but I'm looking for the Griffey in that card too to pair with the 94.
Yeah, I mean, my years are still a little bit messy when it comes to baseball cards because they're usually a year after the basketball ones came out. So one of the first things when I started buying, you know, when I started picking up Jeter, is I went to, you know, how like Jordan has the first Finest Refractor in 93.
Yeah.
Baseball had them as well, but Jeter's first Finest Refractor is the 95.
So cool.
And I got this one with the coating.
Yeah.
And, you know, PSA 9, that's the other thing that I'll mention when it comes to the prices of these cards for me personally.
And people some people have already asked in the comments here, kind of like, why are you switching from BGS to PSA? So whenever you're ready to tell that story, but keep on showing cards too.
I'll show a few more and then I'll explain my thought process. Sterling 96 refractor with coating. This is just another classic 90s card. And then, you know, the Apprentice's Kobe refractor, the rookie. This to me is like the Jeter version, the Phenoms. You got the bronze border. It's Finest. It's so 96.
Cool, so nice. So and a Mint 9 is still a great, great. I mean, so I don't even want to say the word still. A Mint 9 is just a great card, especially back then, coding too.
Yeah, I mean, so PSA, why PSA? Well, my whole thing visually is I want them all to look the same. So PSA, they all look the same. If I flash all these, you have no idea what's what. They're all white labels. You have no idea what the grade is. The grade doesn't really, not that it matters, but I'm sure 10 would be nice for anybody, but I won't pay like 3.5x a 9 to get a 10. I'd rather buy the 9 and then buy another 9 to equal that 110. In the long run, keep going up, the 9s will follow. That's the logic that I have. I mean, if we come to talk about money for the cards. So let me show you these two. Remember I said I had the Kobe, the Green EX. So I made sure to get a Jeter. I mean, these are just stunning cards with the sky. You know, when I first saw these cards, obviously with the Kobe, I mean, it was just beautiful. And then I got the credentials to match it.
What's the number two credentials?
This one is to 299.
Amazing, man. What a great pair. What a beautiful pair of cards.
So that, let me flash some more stuff. They don't make stuff like this anymore. The linchpin.
Oh, God, what a card.
With the bolts. Jeremy, there's no innovation anymore like there was in the 90s. Like this stuff, I mean, listen, you can make a million parallels nowadays, but it doesn't hit the same. For me personally.
You know what, Milan? That second half of the 90s was a magical, magical period in the hobby. And, you know, for me, it was the only time in the hobby where I wasn't paying close attention. I paid attention from 1980 until 1993, 94.
Right.
And then I kind of stopped paying close attention. I still had my cards and loved them, but I wasn't following all the new releases so closely until again in like 2000, I got back in, and I've been heavy since 2000, but it was like that four or five, 6 years, whatever it was. I don't remember exactly. And now that's the period that I'm the most interested. And it's kind of cool because it's all new to me now. Like you watch, I remember when I watched Entourage, remember the series Entourage?
Yep,
I watched
yep,
the
yep.
whole thing, watched the whole thing, loved it. And then I had a buddy who's like, yeah, me and my wife or me and my girlfriend, we're just starting Entourage. I'm like, I'm so jealous. You're just starting Entourage. I'd love to start it again without ever seeing it. And now it's like with second half of the 90s, I got into it like 2.5 years ago or so. And it's maybe, I forget exactly, say 2 to 3 years ago, I got into the late 90s basketball.
Yes.
And now I'm into baseball too with Griffey. But it's like everything is new to me. And I feel like a kid in a candy store. It's like, whoa, this is amazing, right? I get to experience it for the first time 20, 25 years later, which is awesome.
That's what it's all about. It's kind of, that's the whole rediscovering yourself. Like you find things to keep you motivated, interested, and to keep you wanting to spend money. I mean, there's always something to discover. No, seriously, but there's always something to discover. And, you know, it never ends.
But spending,
luckily.
I was just going to say, spending money is it's like the easiest thing to do in the hobby. You know what I mean? Like who does, although you need the money to spend and that's not always easy to do, but you find a way if a card comes up that you need.
Luckily, that time period, there are so many great cards. Luckily, and so many inserts and so many short prints that you literally like, it's very hard to get them all. Like it's almost impossible to get them all unless you started way back then. Like nowadays, I'll never have most of the cards, but I mean, I got some, I'm happy with what I got in the time that I got them. I'm completely fine. I'll try to pick up some more as they go along, but listen, it's as they say, what is it? It's not a sprint. It's a marathon.
Exactly. It's the journey that we love so much. And the journey is not just now, it's not just about the acquisition of the cards, because, you know, what one thing 2020 brought us is together yeah. on these platforms more so than ever. I don't know if I'd be doing this show without what happened in 2020. I just don't know. Maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't have, but anyway, we can reminisce on the community and the friends we're making and all that, but let's keep on chatting away anyway.
It's what keeps you moving forward too. I mean, discussing things with people, the way me and you are talking right now, and we have the same passion for the things that we collect. And you meet so many different types of people. Like you can meet a lawyer, a doctor, you can meet, you know, a construction worker, you can meet it doesn't matter. Everybody's in this, like this brings everybody together.
Yeah.
So that's the great thing about it. And it's going to keep growing. Now, will these prices be sustainable? Who knows? But if you collect, if you have a goal, if you have a passion, like, you know, and you'll manage.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Let's go to a few comments here. Colin Murray, I love this question for you, Milani. Says, would you buy a Kobe card now? I mean, he says BGS 95, but would you buy any Kobe card now?
No. No, because I feel like I closed that chapter in my life, and it wouldn't make, you know, it personally wouldn't, it doesn't excite me anymore. Like I'm done with that. That's, you know, I'm grateful and I'm done and I moved on. And, you know, the joy is rejuvenated with other cards and a new player.
Yeah. So you're literally you closed one chapter, you're on to a new one. That's like a characteristic that I think, it's, you know, not everybody could do. I don't know if I could do that. So respect to you for being able to do that and sticking to it. And you seem to be infallible about it. Like no problem. Like I'm good. And that's just great to see, man. That's a good strong conviction in a collector. Courtside Collectibles was just about to send you a DM for some Kobe's, but glad to hear you're able to do something amazing for your family.
I know Courtside. I know he has. He had a few Kobe's back, you know, maybe a year and a half ago that I asked him about. He wouldn't sell them. So,
yeah.
Mine are gone, my friend. Sorry.
Darren says, so great, great double episode tonight. So great coming into this after Easter bunning it up tonight. Great to have you, Darren. Thanks for joining. Henry says, for some reason, the 90s inserts of football, baseball, and hockey still lack way behind basketball. Yeah, I mean, I can speak to hockey for sure lacking behind basketball, but I'm finding the base. I mean, again, I'm newish to it. Baseball, I'm finding there's a lot there. There's some cool stuff, but basketball, yeah, basketball is the best for sure. I think for the selection, but baseball's got a lot of parallels, right? Like, I don't mean parallels in the way a lot of parallels from basketball.
Similar. Baseball. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've got everything from, Flair legacies to credentials to PMGs to, ultra platinum medallions to, I mean, there's a slew of cards that translate over to baseball. I'm not sure about football. I know football has the PMGs. I haven't even looked into it. In terms of hockey, hockey is probably the least, knowledge that I have in terms of cards. But I'm sure you can speak on what 90s inserts are popular in hockey.
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing, man, honestly, from my perspective and to my taste, the 90s inserts, there's a few that I really like. There's a few that are very important that I kind of like, but I prefer the inserts, the hockey inserts from the 2010s, from the decade that just passed. That's where I love so much there. And hockey guy here says the hockey version of those EX with the clouds are very cool. Another set I'm building thanks to Jeremy. Well, he's talking about the 2016 Essential Credentials from Fleer Showcase Hockey. And yeah, they're amazing cards. So, and they're a throwback to those Jeters that you showed. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm a little upset that Flair, Upper Deck lost its license and all these companies went down. I mean, granted, sure, Panini's here, but competition is good. Competition brings innovation. We might, in 10 years, who knows what happened, but in 10, 15 years, we might look at this era right now with Prism being the flagship as just being another, Tops from 1989 per se, that the print runs and everything, like it's not one of those things that I could attach myself to fully. I did dabble in it, like I said, with RJ Barrett, but it just, I stepped away.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. To me, some of these Prism cards are, like you said, they seem to, I've had the discussion on Clubhouse about Pop reports and his 15,000 PSA 10 Lucas or whatever, 20,000, whatever the number is now, are going to be. Is that too many for the market to absorb? And I, for whatever reason, I'm in the minority here. It's not a very popular take, but I don't think 15,000 is a huge population relative to the amount of sports fans or Luca fans. It's certainly a high pop relative to lower pop cards, like a 30 or a 200 or a 300. But I always say to myself, listen, you go to a Mavericks game, there's 15,000 people in that stadium. Who wouldn't want a Luka rookie card in that stadium? Maybe a few people who are dragged to the game or whatever, and that's only one stadium in one city. I want one. I'm in Canada. I'm a random kid in Canada here who wants one. But my point to all this is that there will be a few important cards because they're still the rookie cards of those players. They're the everyday rookie card, the commodity card. So, but you're not a rookie card collector, so it's not going to appeal to you. But the people who are rookie card collectors, I think some of these will still be important down the road, no matter how big the populations end up being relative to future years and that sort of thing. Just a thought.
No, I don't disagree with that. My only counter would be, instead of, if you really want to collect Luka and you can, I would not get a silver Prism. I would get something that's short printed. Just thinking about it like this, there's only, 330 PSA 10 Fleer Jordans. You notice how the market started going up and more appeared on the market? Now, that's only 300. So out of those 300, 10 people decided to sell theirs at that time? And the last two, three, four, they've gone down significantly. Granted, since the high.
January Golden sales.
Since the high. Well, granted, those people that sold them most likely bought them for pennies on the dollar compared to what they sold them for. But the person that bought them, or the person that bought the 725, the record high one, I mean, unless I'm sure they're wealthy, so it doesn't matter to them. But think of that in terms of 15,000 Luka prisms being sold. I mean, and you bought, let's say somebody bought one for 10,000 or whatever they're going for now, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000. Now imagine something happening where they skyrocket, there's a pinpoint, and then 100 out of the 15,000 people decide to sell the next 100 copies.
Or 1,000.
Or 1,000 copies. I mean, just think of it in that perspective, and you could kind of, my thought process when it comes to, if you collect Luka and you want to have one in your PC, it's a staple. It's a staple to have one, but if you're worried about...
When you say a shorter print Luka, how short print are you talking about? Like how many serial numbered copies? Are you talking 99, 299?
Well, it's very hard with Prism because first of all, they don't give you the stated odds. They don't give you the print. I mean, some of the cards have print runs, but the ones that have the print runs are astronomical in price anyways right now. But if you're able to afford one, like, I would probably try to get a shorter print one, then go for the silver prism that's attainable by anybody and can just flood the market at any minute.
So when you say shorter print, you're not necessarily referring to a serially numbered card. You're referring to we know it's shorter printed, and the pop report on the PSA or BGS website is going to be a lot smaller than the base print or the silver prism.
Right. Like, I mean, when I was into it, I was looking at gold waves. Like, you have the gold prism and then you have the gold wave. It still looks nice. It's not serial numbered, but it's still shorter than, like there's the red wave. Like, it's different type. Like, they have so many varieties, which is just, it blows my mind. If you try to keep up with it nowadays, good luck to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. Like, back at the National in 2019, I bought my Luka Prism base, PSA 10, a Kawhi, and a Pascal Siakam. And I mean, what I paid was pennies on the dollar for now. Like, I got the Luka for $40. It's now $1,400 or something. I mean, so I don't really care if it, I don't want to see it go down, but it may go down. If it does, at least I'm protected because I got in so cheap. So, but I hear you. Like, you're making me think about it for sure. Like, what's the right card to have? Because I want these guys represented in my personal collection. So it just depends on how they're represented.
And things like that, if they were to happen, and it's not impossible that it won't happen, will affect the community as a whole, because people will get a sour taste in their mouth and they will leave. You have a lot of new money coming in that all they see is how you make profit in this business, how you make profit. But there's so many nuances to it. In the end, as they say, collect the goats. And I have a great quote for you. I was going to leave it for the end. But I'm going to just say it for you right now. I think this was a comment I made on a card by Centerpiece Collectibles. Default to rarity every chance you get.
Default to rarity every chance you get. Yeah.
That is just the epitome of collecting.
It's just good advice.
Good advice. That's pretty much... that sums up so many things when it comes to, the oversaturation of everything nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great quote. Default to rarity.
Every chance you get.
Every chance you get. Yeah, good stuff. Okay, let's go to some more comments we have. Hockey Guy says, finding the stuff you want is sometimes the hardest part, but also the most fun part. Yeah, I mean, looking at your eBay searches every day is, going to card shows, looking for cards, finding cards on Instagram, Facebook Marketplace, wherever. Dennis, we've probably lost him by now, but good night to Dennis. Sanderson Torres says, what's your favorite Kobe and favorite Jeter cards?
My favorite Kobe was the one that I pulled, the Skybox Rubies. That was the one that meant the most to me. After that, it was the Jambalaya, obviously, because of the recognizability and the value that it ended up having. For Jeter, I mean, I have a few cards, but I'll show my favorite Jeter at the end.
At the end, Sanderson Tor, at the end. Dr. Full says favorite Shaq. Well, you never collected Shaq.
I had the Raws. Like, I used to collect the Flair 94 with the US team. Like, I had the whole US team set of Shaq with the American flag in the back. But I got, you know, I stopped in 95 collecting Shaq.
Okay. Okay. I collect some Shaq cards. I don't know how many I have, maybe a dozen or so. And I have a nice one incoming right now, but it's not coming for a couple months because I bought it raw, but he's getting it graded.
I thought you bought it on ComC.
No, I didn't buy it on ComC. No, not this card. This was an Instagram buy, actually. I bought it raw. And the deal I did with the seller was I've sent him some money, but it now depending on what, because he's getting it graded at his cost. And depending mm-hmm. on what grade the card comes back at, we're square at like one grade. If it comes back a half a point higher, I owe him money. And if it comes back a half point lower, he owes me some refund. So it's going to take a couple months, but he's going to get the card graded, ship back to him, and then he's going to ship it to me. It's a fun deal, but I'm now with the wager.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. I'm now in waiting mode. So we'll see when it comes in. Darren says, Milan, what's your take on soccer cards right now? Are you in on it?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I like the nice quick answer. Sanderson Dora says a million slabs are going to hit the market in the next 2 years. When the market floods, the prices drown. I mean, it depends what these slabs. Yeah. You can't dispute that comment. It just depends on, there's a couple things that are going to impact that, in my opinion. One is, are we going to see growth in the hobby continued? If we are, now there's more absorption for these cards. And I know that may or may not happen. So I'm just putting it out there as a possible impact on the comment. And the other thing is, of those million slabs, and that's actually very low, I think, very low, is what are these slabs? If they're all prism, then everybody other than prism isn't impacted. And I know it's not all prism, but you know what I mean? Like, it really depends what these cards are. But at the end of the day, I think every card is going to have some numbers added to their pop reports. And that just depends to what degree each card is hit.
How many of these cards that come back are going to be of players that aren't even in the league anymore when they come back?
Yeah, exactly. How many Bulls are coming back? Yeah. I'm not saying he won't be in the league, but it's like, I don't mean, like, no offense against Bull, but like, who cares? Like, you know, unless you've submitted 100 Bulls. All right, let's see. Chris says, agree with Milan regarding print runs. If 1,000 of these cards show up after a huge sale, the value is likely going to drop a decent amount. Yeah, that's just basic supply and demand.
Right.
Let's see. What else do we got here? Some of these sets have 40 parallels too. Optic colors seem to be a popular substitute to the prism stuff. Lucky says 10 million will hit. And I think that's still low. I'm hearing, like, maybe try 15 to 20 million is where I think it's going to be.
That might only be with PSA. I mean, I'm sure BGS is backed up a couple million as well.
I heard 15 million between the two, but it's hearsay. I mean, we can't trust these numbers are rumor, but somewhere there might be what's the deviation from that? Like, how far away are we? Who knows? Tyson says the pop report on some of these cards from the 90s artist high as from the 90s high as some of these cards today. What's better? Sorry, Tyson. I'm not reading the question properly. Waxel says buy rare, buy raw. I don't remember where I saw that quote, but it saved me some money. That's not bad advice either. Yep. And Peter says, referring to the 1 million slabs, that goes back to Milan saying default to rarity. Cards with serial numbered 999 or less are going to have a better shot at retaining prices. I think that's exactly right. I think 999 is actually 9,000 is a really nice number for a print run, you know, for a print run, not a pop, but a print run.
But for nowadays, 999 is like 99 back then. I mean, literally, if you have 10 million people in the hobby now and you have one of the cards that's 999, it's like having a million people, 20 years ago and you pulling in a card 299. I mean, there's still... but this is all relating to the cards that have been coming out the past 3-4 years.
Right.
I personally have no connection to these cards because I don't see a value in them long term. There might be a few outliners, but there's no players that I per se enjoy that I want to spend money on and spend this amount of money on pursuing them for the next 10, 15 years. It's not going to repeat itself for me, at least in that sense. Like, this isn't going to happen in my investing.
No, I'm with you. You know, it reminds me of what Adam, the real 27 guy, his approach to the hobby is also rarity. Rarity ahead of everything, especially ahead of the commodity type cards. And you're basically saying the same thing. So, you know, hearing it from two seasoned collectors amongst everybody else, I mean, it's not, these aren't like, you know, real tough things to think about.
It's common sense.
It's common sense. Exactly. But at the same time, I just want to say that, you know, it all depends on what the future holds for the hobby. If the future goes even, you know, I don't think it's mainstream yet. Mainstream to me means that, like, if you're a sports fan, you are a card collector. And that's not the case right now. Not all sports fans are card collectors. So if it gets to that point where everybody collects cards who likes sports, now, you know, if there are a million collectors in the hobby, if there, you know, are there, is there, and I'm pulling that number with no reason for it, but let's say there's a million collectors in the hobby right now. If in a year, 2 or 3 years from now, are there going to be 500,000 collectors, or are there going to be 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, 5 million collectors? Right. Wherever that goes, that's going to determine what these cards are going to be worth down the road. Not the pop as much, because, you know, you add a million people to the hobby and you add maybe 10,000 cards to the pop. That's enough to to absorb it, I think.
My only counter to that would be is you don't know how the player is going to perform in 3 to 5 years. You can't just guarantee that his cards prices are going to keep going up.
100%. And that's not even a counter, Milan, because to me, I'm already saying that Luka, Zion, Trey, these guys actually are worthy of and pursued at that point, like down the road 5 years. So I'm already, that's assumed in what I'm saying. But, you know, you're 100% correct. Completely agree. Hockey guy says, wonder how many cards are now currently slabbed versus waiting to be graded and slabbed. So maybe slabbed, but not made their way out into the owner's hands yet. Lucky K has inside information. PSA is sitting on about 11 million right now. But, you know, and that number makes sense to me, because I've heard 15 between the two. If they've got 11 and Beckett has 4, is that the ratio of the mark of the pie of the market share? I don't know. Maybe it's close.
It could very well be, you know, the exact number. I mean, but it seems logical that they're backed up. What are they doing now? PSA is doing July, I believe, orders now, or August.
Well, they're saying they're not going to take orders until July 1. And that, to me, I mean, that's what they're saying. But who knows when they can open up again. They've got to work through the backlog, I guess. And
So
that whole thing's been talked about enough in our hobby. And Chris says, at this point, I'm just buying what looks cool. Player collections have slowed down so much. Yeah, buy what looks cool. That's a great approach. Buy what you like, you know. But there's also something to be said for a very focused collection too. Two more comments rolled in, or three actually, and then we'll start to wrap up. But we're already at an hour and 23 minutes, man. It goes by so fast, hey?
When you're having fun.
Peter says, I think Hockey Guy meant how many total PSA cards are out there compared to the 15 million waiting. Okay, makes sense. A $5,000 card is an ACL tear away from being 20 bucks.
Right.
That's a big drop, but yeah. Close to it, I'd say. No, I mean already graded, currently in circulation versus the amount. Okay. Don't know. Good question. And Waxel says, PSA has the total amount of cards listed in the pop report of each sport, 16 million baseball and 4 million basketball slabbed. So that's 20 right there. Hockey and football and Pokemon to that, and soccer and wrestling maybe. What, you know, altogether, what are you at versus what's still in there? Yeah. Interesting numbers. If anybody wants to do that analysis, come back next week. Let's talk about it. Lucky K, nice stream. Thank you both. Thank you, Lucky K, very much.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else you want to chat about, Milan? Oh, we were talking the other night. We were talking about the second half of the 90s cards. And I mean, we've already touched on them, but we haven't yet touched on what is going to be the desirability of 90s inserts and parallels. Right. 10, 20, 30 years down the road. Because we touched on this the other night, and I thought we had an interesting conversation. Can you speak to your thoughts on that?
Yes. So, you know, when you think about these things down the line, you know, like kids that were born, let's say after 2001, that never experienced the 90s, have no connection to that era per se. You know, I gave it some more thought, and I think that, you know, one thing will be a major factor between the prices of the 90s cards that I don't think it's going to dip in, per se. It's going to be the players that played through that era. Jordan, Kobe in basketball, Duncan, you know, you even have Iverson, McGrady. Like these are some of the players that were favorites.
Shaq,
Ray Allen, yes. So these are, you know, you'll have stories about them. In baseball, Griffey is Jordan when it comes to prices. Other than the SP, Griffey is Jordan. Jeter is Kobe when you compare the prices of the 90s cards. And then, you know, a plethora of other great players. You know, not that I'm going to name baseball players, but I know basketball more. But I think those players, on top of the cards, look awesome.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're distinguishable. They're awesome. They're and there's stories behind them that are being told, like down the line. Like when we, you know, when we tell somebody why this card is this, it gets passed down. I mean, that's kind of where I'm thinking that they're going to stay relative moving forward because of the players, and number two, because of the designs.
Yeah. I think they're going to stay relevant as well. So the conversation we were having was basically like, are these cards going to remain relevant in 30 years, 40, 50 years, even from now, those 90s cards. And what I was thinking was, you know, you've got these, if you, you know, we can simplify the eras of the hobby. You can simplify it this. I'm going to simplify it as into three eras, 1900 to 1995. So 95 years. 95 to 2000, 5 years, and 2000 till current. Okay, those are the three. Now, I'm not saying those are the three definitive eras. I'm just saying for the purpose of this discussion, let's look at those. Let's define eras that way. So, if you look at collectors today who are anywhere, but there's collectors between the age of 14, a youngster whose show I was on last night, to collectors in their you know 50s and 60s. There's people through all ages that are collecting cards from 30, 40, 50 years before they were born, right? I'm born in the 70s, but I collect cards going back to 1910. Players I've never watched and there's no video on them, but they're still important in the hobby and in the history of sport. They're pioneers, that kind of thing. There's trophies named after them and awards and divisions and all sorts of things. So I use that as sort of a baseline and I say, okay, I'm born in the 70s and I'm collecting cards of players born in the 60s, 50s, 40s, 30s, all the way back. You know, 40 years down the road, are people going to collect cards from before they were born? And then I think to myself, well, listen, the 90s, there were lots of different cards made and it's such a narrow margin of time, only 5 years, but I think it's like a golden era of the history of the hobby. I think it's like one of those 5 year periods that will always be important because there's so many awesome, important, rare cards that I can see people in 2050, 2060, 20, like way down the road collecting them, just like I'm collecting cards, just like the same way that I want a Jackie Robinson rookie or a Babe Ruth Gowdy or a Ty Cobb T206.
Yep.
The list goes on and on. So the discussion, I think we both ended up agreeing that, yeah, these cards are going to remain important, and especially because it was really only a 5 year period. So they are very rare when you put them in the population of all cards ever made.
That, yes, that the rarity and also the player attached to that card.
And the aesthetics.
So, you know, players left the legacy, just like you said, you know, Jackie Robinson, so on and so forth. These are players that left legacies before you were born that gets talked about today. People are always going to talk about Michael Jordan. People are always going to talk about Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, you know, and so on and so forth. So that's going to stick.
And people are collecting later year cards of all these legends. It's not like you're only going to the rookie cards. So someone might say, well, yeah, but you know, in 2060, everyone's just going to want the Jordan rookie. Well, No, I don't think so. I think they'll look for other alternatives. Plus, it's not a rare card, relatively speaking, so they might go to others.
Yeah. I mean, I guarantee you that if a green PMG came on the market today, that it would probably sell, if not more than the Fleer rookie, it would, you know, at least easy. That.
Easy.
And it's 12 years into his career. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah,
I agree. We have a few more comments, and then you were going to show your favorite Jeter.
I'm going to count three down for you.
Three of them. Okay, let's do the final comments here, or it's not the final, but some of the comments that have come in the last few minutes. Hockey Guy says a cool thing is cool regardless of era. Some of the 90s designs seem to be timeless. People are still captivated by art that is hundreds, if not thousands of years old. Fair point.
Yep.
Peep says, have you talked about remaining late 90s and early 2000s unopened wax bricking? Is there a feeling of the higher grade pop won't rise because of the fragile nature of remaining unopened wax? No, Peeps, we haven't talked about it. Sanderson says, Milan is not a follow-up. He's a lead-in. Great job tonight. That's awesome comment. That's a great comment.
Thank you, sir.
It's a great comment. All right, let's see your favorite three Jeters, and then we're going to wrap this up.
All right, so I'll start with this one I picked up literally 2 weeks ago, and it kind of blew my mind that I was able to pick it up. They don't come up very often. And you can let me turn the light down a little bit. And you could even, if anybody wants to go back on eBay and see what this car went for. I mean, it had to be a mistake, but I'm glad I jumped on it. So this is the PMG Hardball Galaxy from Metal Universe. There is supposedly only 45 copies of this. This is serial number 250. So this was done by Marvel. By a Marvel artist was brought into Metal Universe to do this set for these cards. And this one is 26 out of 50.
Why do you say there's only supposedly 45 of them?
Because I read on Baseballpedia for this set, 45 were inserted into the packs, like to 45. The last five was a redemption. So if you pulled one of the last five, or there was a special card, you got the whole set.
Okay.
So five copies were left for, you know, whoever was lucky enough to pull one of those. They would get the whole set of the PMGs of all the players. So Beautiful. Only 45 made it out into PEX.
Such a cool looking card.
The next one is, I actually cracked this out of a BGS 9 case. This is the 99 Essential Credentials Jeter, and this is serial number 2112. I never had the Kobe in this. I couldn't afford the Kobe in this, but I sure as hell made sure that I jumped on the Jeter when I had the chance. And it's a BGS 9. I cracked it open, and I'm going to, you know, eventually submit it to PSA for uniformity's sake.
I love the lettering of his name on that card. As you were showing it, it was real like shiny and sparkly.
Yeah.
It was a really nice pattern in the letters of the Jeter. Like, what a great, is that foil? I've never seen one of those in hand.
It's gold foil on the name, gold foil on the EX logo,
yeah,
and then gold foil on the shortstop by the Yankee logo over here.
Man, the 90s made some amazing cards. What care and attention to detail they put into those.
It feels like luxury, like when you look at it. Like, you know when something feels luxurious?
Like a leather interior on a car or
right? Like, you could tell it was done with a certain type of, thought behind it. It wasn't just put together for the sake of being put together. And then the last one is actually, I got this on Instagram through a good buddy of mine. He posted on his story. I jumped on it like as soon as I saw it. This is the 98 Skybox EX Future. And this is number 294. And it's a PSA 8, which is another thing I just want to touch on. When they're rare cards, I do not care if it's a PSA 5, 6, 7, 8. As long as they don't look like they're chewed up, jump on it if you can.
Yeah.
Do not let, you know, rare items pass you by. So I could dream of having this Kobe. I probably didn't even know this Kobe existed because it never came up throughout the years that I was searching on eBay. But when this came up, I had to jump on it right away. So those are my
When it comes to a rare card, you know, sometimes the condition just doesn't, like the grade, I should say.
Right.
and the condition, it just doesn't matter, especially if it's a super rare card that never comes up. So I'm with you 100%, man. 100%. Yeah, beautiful. I love that final three. Those are all grail type cards.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, it's just, you know, one brick at a time, building a backup, one brick at a time.
Yep. Hockey Guy says the time to buy a rare card is when you see it. Yeah. Hobby words to live by for sure. For sure. Okay, man. Well, hey, hour 35 minutes. This has been a lot of fun. You've been an awesome guest. Great stories. I hope everyone in the chat enjoyed Milan as our after hours guest tonight on April the 3rd, Saturday night. I don't know. I got nothing else to say. Any final comments, Milan? Final comments from you, and we're good to wrap it up.
Jeremy, I just wanted to say it was a pleasure. Thank you for having me on and being courteous to having me, you know, just tell a little piece of my story and my hobby collecting journey. And keep up the great work, man. You're a true asset to the hobby moving forward. And I'm sure you're in for big things. And the plethora of guests that you've had in the past, that you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. Keep it up. Thank you to everybody in the chat. If you guys want to give me a follow, I'll follow back and we'll be in touch. And just a great time. And happy Easter, everybody that's celebrating it tomorrow.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Thank you for the compliments. I appreciate it, man. I'm glad we got to spend, you know, the best thing about what I'm doing now is, and I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again, is we've now spent 2.5 hours together, you know. Yeah. You know, I mean, we've never met, we've never shaken hands, but when I see you, it's going to, I don't know, we're probably going to like hug it out, right? Like we're
pals, you know? We have to, man. Hopefully we'll see each other one day. I mean, it's, you know, shows are coming back.
Coming back. They'll be back. Okay, man. It's been awesome having you. We're going to go through the final comments. Don't click out yet. We'll see you in the back room, but I just want to bring in the final comments here. 23 Aranis says, thank you, Jeremy and Milan, for another great after hour show. Thank you, 23 Aranis. Dave Logs drooling over those credentials. Me too, bro. Me too. He says you're drooling over Milan. Terry Fortune, thank you very much for joining us. Jeff McMahon, always great to have you. Says great after hour show as usual. Hockey Guy says very cool cards, Milan. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Hockey Guy.
We got my guy, this is the show I was talking about. I was on last night, Card Canucks, young Charles. The guy is 13 or 14 years old. He just started a show. I was his first guest last night. Check out his channel. He was an absolute pro hosting me on his show last night. And he collects vintage hockey. So, you know,
nice.
I mean, he's literally, I don't know if he might be 14 now. Literally, he does not come across as a 14-year-old. Check it out, guys, just for fun. Check it out. It's worthy. Peter Chow, great show. Jeremy Milan, I'm not a basketball guy, but a compelling story with the Kobe's. That's awesome. Peep says, peace out, pals. All right, good night, everybody. Thank you for joining tonight. What a fun and crazy evening it's been. We'll see you all hopefully next Saturday. Ken Golden will be on first, and we'll have after hours as well. Have a great week ahead. Happy Easter to those who are celebrating.